I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Rugby World Cup final week. The All Blacks against South Africa, the two greatest teams in Rugby World Cup history. Arguably the greatest rivalry in rugby history, probably as deep a respect as can run between two countries in a sport. It's going to be an absolutely huge test match, the first time they've met in the final since 1995, which seems like a travesty to me that these two teams have taken so long since they got there. So we're going to get into that. We're going to see how the box got over England. What was so good about the All Blacks as they threw aside Argentina? We'll also have a look at a few questions from our viewers, the North versus South debate and why the Southern Hemisphere teams were so good in knockout footy and continue to be so good in knockout footy despite the rankings. We'll also have a quick look at the WXV as well, the first weekend of that competition down here in New Zealand. So with no further ado, James Parsons.
Hello.
Yes, what a week.
Oh, it's a great weekend of footy. That was a clinical display by the All Blacks, and I look forward to getting stuck into it with our old mate Brynner here.
Yeah. Coming in from Japan, Bryn Hall. Must have been really, really good sitting in Japan watching that game thinking, what time in the morning was it? 4 a.m?
Yeah, it was 4 a.m. our time. So, very similar to the week before getting up at that time. But look, I think, man, we'll go into it. But I think we're heading in the right direction going into a final. You're talking around teams that are building nicely. I think, you know, we're pretty much at a point where you'd want to be in a final with the results that we've had with the quarterfinal and the semifinal. So South Africa, we'll touch on that. But I think for them, it's probably the best thing that's happened to them, I think, getting out of that the way that they did. We'll go into a little bit deeper, but I think, there's from hearing from afar, the All Blacks seem to be the favourites over there. But in saying that, I think South Africa with Rusty, we're having a great mindset around the South Africans this week and building them up with, a few pitches around their media room or team room, I reckon.
They're world number one, they're reigning world champions, and they know how to get things done. I can't see New Zealand being the favourite going into this game.
No, I can see why people are jumping on that bandwagon, though, a little bit. Like, the clinical display, the lack of errors, the defence that they've shown, their game's just gone from strength to strength throughout this whole competition, and they can score points. You know, like they are electric on attack. You know, look at Will Jordan, 3 tries on the weekend. Probably should have been 4. but look, they're in red hot form, and if they can produce what they did in the semi final, I think they are worthy of that favourite tag.
Mm. What did you like the most about the way the All Blacks went about their business against Argentina when thinking about how that could work against the Springboks in a final?
I suppose what I like is the opportunities. I think 9 entries into the 22, 7 tries, beautiful. That you're coming away with points most, the discipline on defence as well. Their ability to just make tackle after tackle and just weren't even when they were miles ahead, they were not prepared to concede tries. Mm. I think defence will win this World Cup, and they seem to be finding their shape really nicely.
Mm. What about you, Bryn? What do you think?
Again, I think in the very first game, in the quarterfinal stage, against Ireland, you know, they had turnovers very early on that kind of set the tone defensively for the All Blacks. And again, on the weekend, within the first 20 minutes, they had 3 turnovers, you know, been able to stunt that momentum of the Argentinians. So I thought, you know, in that first 5-10 minutes, even with Bofelli, his first penalty, they were able to build pressure and been able to ask a lot of questions of the All Blacks defensively in terms of phases, but we were able to get turnovers in crucial moments in that early period. So, I thought it was really, really good. And considering that we've talked around their defense and the kind of worries that I did have, again, their connection was really, really great around decision-making and then the wide channels, and then also our turnover work and being able to build pressure from getting those jackal turnovers.
One thing I found interesting was, you know, Argentina in those first couple of channels flew out of the line in defence. Their big loose forwards did an amazing job there. And the All Blacks, unlike they hadn't before, handled that very well. I would think if you looked at last year or the year before that, that was where they're coughing up balls, their tip passes are going wrong, and they're going backwards.
Yeah, they were very patient on attack, and they just created that depth by probably slowing their foot speed, Bryn. You know, like, it wasn't about just being deeper, they're just slowing their foot speed and their ability to sort of release those balls out the back and then find the space on the edge. Like, we spoke about Argentina being a little bit loose around the ruck and probably overcommitting at the breakdown, and they did probably do that a couple of times and got penalised for it, but they actually tightened their defence up really well, and the All Blacks, you know, sort of reacted to that and found that width, I suppose, that width in their game. And you know, and those big boys had to do a little bit of work first, as you said, you know, in that first 20 minutes it was a bit of an arm wrestle, but then they just sort of took over from there.
What do you mean by slowed their footwork?
I suppose it's like, you know, if you run fast into something, you're going to shut down your own time and space. So it's almost just a little bit more patient, taking less steps and, I suppose, starting your run later so that you're not shutting down your time and space, so you can see the full picture and then obviously find the space wherever it may be.
You got something there, Bryn?
The longer that Joe Smith's been in this team, I believe, around that breakdown work, I think, you know, you look at Shannon Frizzell's tries, the multi-phases of being able to hold onto the ball for long periods of time and being efficient at that breakdown for long periods of try. You look at that try just before half time, that really kind of sealed the match, I thought, early in that the back end of the first half. Boys have been able to go over the advantage line, quick cleans, and been able to ask questions of their Argentinian defence. So probably 12 months ago, the questions that you were talking around just now, Ross, around the tip balls not hitting the right person, mistakes, not winning that clean breakdown. We weren't able to get those long phases, but we are trending in the right direction. We've done that against Ireland in that quarterfinal, and then now we've done it against Argentinians. But it's going to go up another level because, you know, that breakdown area with the South Africans, even when the bomb squad comes on in that last 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you've got to be able to stay on those areas. And we've been able to do it the last 2 weeks, which has been great for our attack.
And that slows defensive line speed down as well, like that collision. If you win the collision with the carry, get those quick cleans, they don't have time to get set to actually put that rush defence pressure on. So that, as Bryn said, you know, like the collision work that, you know, Schmidt's been focusing on, and he's doing a hell of a job. And the big boys are rolling their sleeves up, man. Like they're doing some mighty efforts at the moment, the boys in the low numbers.
Now, that brings us to our first question from a viewer, Isaac October, via email. You can send us an email to aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz or send us a question in the YouTube comments section. He wants to know about this rush defence and how the All Blacks handle it. Against the Springboks, is it worth playing without the ball?
Depends on what the conditions are. I think you saw the kick strategy worked quite well for England in terms of that contestable. And so it's an area of South Africa are normally really good at, but they, you know, obviously the conditions were challenging. But I think rush D is exactly what we sort of just spoke about, that you've got to, you can control it yourself by how efficient you are in and around that breakdown, but also how patient you are to almost draw that defence out. Because rush D does come with, you know, you have to be really connected to do rush D. If one person is a little bit hesitant, that's normally the space that you can sort of pull teams apart. So I think Richie Mong is in great form, and he's sort of just orchestrating things really nicely at the moment.
Mm. Bryn, when you looked at that England team and the pressure they put on against South Africa, particularly at set piece and, you know, in around those pressure areas of the game, were you surprised by how that played out, by how vulnerable South Africa looked under that kind of game, which you would think is quite familiar to them?
Vulnerable, yeah, it's probably a good way to put it. I just think the way that the conditions were that Jip talked about, it probably fit into England's game plan very, very perfect. You know, I think if there wasn't any rain, the ability to be able to hold onto the ball, the tip passes, and the attacking ability that they do have, it's a lot easier to do it when it's dry footy. But the way they did in that first 20, 30 minutes, when you could see the effort areas that I touched on around their kick chase, their hard ball gets, the amount of in that first half, three or four hard ball gets off a contestable. And you could see that it was a real mindset around with their contestables. They weren't necessarily trying to catch the ball. They were trying to get one hand up and just trying to bat it back. to make it a contest and then dive on that ball and then being able to build pressure off that. So I don't think the All Blacks will fall into that game plan, even if it is wet. It's just very, very uncharacteristic for us. We'll probably want to hold on to the ball and still be able to win the breakdown area to then attack. But what it can show is that if it is wet or you don't have that momentum, you can go to the contestable games, which we have seen from Aaron Smith, Richie Mwanga of 10, and then also we have the attacking ability of our 12 and our 15 with Bodie and Geordie to have the attacking kicks. So it's just being able to pull trigger the game management in the right moments. You know, you look at that last 10 minutes for the Irish game, we were able to be able to manipulate that with our kicking game. So we have shown that we can go in and between running the ball, game management pressure like England do, but I think we'll have more of an attacking mindset, even if we do have a bit of rain as well.
But then the last 20 minutes, the box were able to do what needed to be done. What was it about what the box did at that time? And do you think that that's the platform that they'll look to set against the All Blacks early rather than waiting late?
Yeah, look, I think they got their act together and just, you know, managed to get it home. Like, it wasn't clinical, you know, like I think they'd probably wanted to have done it a little bit more comfortable, but it's their bread and butter. They started winning the bigger sort of set piece battles and the breakdown and getting rewarded for doing so. So, you know, obviously that penalty that allowed them to go ahead, and I think it was Ellis Genge got penalised for sort of not holding his own body weight, which is, you know, that's sort of what you expect from South Africa, but it was obviously the role reversal in that first sort of 60 minutes.
It was, Bryn, quite a phenomenal turnaround. I think one of the things I'm most interested in is the evolution of the bench, and when you look at the way the box use their bench and the way that traditionally benches have been used with young guys with pace and power looking to make impact, the way they've flipped that on its head and turned it into an experienced outfit coming on to close games.
Yeah, well, it's working, and I think the benefit of having older players is the experience of understanding game management. And you look at that game in particular, you're probably thinking with Lebok and Willemse at 9 and 10, at 10 and 15, they had the mindset of, you know, playing with ball in hand, having the contestable games of Lebok and Reinick a little bit, but I think more so having that attacking mindset. But figuring it out that it was raining and it probably wasn't going that way, to pull trigger and bring on Pollard at the 30 minutes is a massive call to be able to try and do that. But what it does show is that, yeah, Fuff the Klerk coming on the 43rd minute, LaRue comes on at 45, and Snyman comes on 46 minutes. You know, they had the ability to understand, and this is why I think that this is a really good result for them in terms that they had to change their game plan and they were able to do it. Now, yes, it wasn't clinical, but when they needed those moments to be able to try and score points, you look at the try in the 68th minute with Snyman, it went back to be able to score a try, and then Quaha makes a big play around the contestable off Stewart in the 74th minute, and then it goes back to their set piece, their bomb score to win a game, which has shown that for the full 80 minutes, you have to stay on for the whole time, especially coming to set piece. So to answer your question, the experience of those guys, sometimes you would think a younger bench would come on and be able to impact the game with fast footy tempo, but considering where the game was at, those decisions and bringing those guys on with that experience was the winning of the game, I believe.
And I think you've got to take their strengths away from them. You know, if the All Blacks look at it like not kicking out, for instance, no less line outs, quick throw-ins, you know, sort of go against where they want to go. And obviously discipline's massive in that, because you don't want to piggyback them in into your 22 with a driving maul opportunity. So I think there's elements in the way the game plan can be set up for the All Blacks that can, you know, really put them under more pressure, but also that frustration, because that's where they want to be. They want to be in those sort of set-piece battles and having that control, I suppose, at the breakdown.
We've got another question in and around that line-outs element from Joe Kudsir, one of our regular question askers via email. Sam Whitelock, does he start the game to challenge the box line-out, considering what you saw early on in that game against England and how the English were able to unsettle Bongi Mbonambi and his jumpers?
I think there's so much, like, between the three, like, it probably doesn't matter as much. And I think, you know, we saw it work really well in the Ireland game, Ireland Test match in the quarterfinal. And I think that mix will be what's given those sort of coaches confidence. So you'd think he'll probably come off the bench, sort of similar to what Bryn just said for South Africa, the older heads and having the ability to be sort of calm, composed in the big moment. And you know, he had a massive play in the Irish test, and I think when teams are tiring, he'll be even more influential with that set piece side.
when you look at that All Blacks bench, let's say Dane Coles is there and Anton Leonard-Brown is there, you're in a similar position, aren't you, to the South Africans, where you do have an extreme amount of experience of level-headed players. Well, Colesy can be level-headed.
It'll be good for us.
But it is a similar kind of makeup. They've also evolved in that direction with their bench.
Yeah, massively. And those guys are all in good form, which helps, you know. Like, there's good competition at training. You've heard it's been a big part of their improvement. And guys like Colesy and that, just like Kevin Mealami played that role in 2015, having players like that come on in big moments, they know that they won't be overawed by it. And that's the sort of experience and nous you need to bring yourself home if they are going to win this World Cup.
Bryn, what's hanging over this game is the Twickenham encounter. You know, the All Blacks' worst ever loss, a couple of weeks out from a World Cup. The South Africans took it to them for the last 20 minutes and it really, the score blew out. Does that matter now? Considering what you've seen over the 8 weeks since, is that even a factor outside of the receipts that Artie Savia has probably kept in his wallet?
Yeah, I don't think you can take too much from it. I think we're a new side, and I think South Africa are a new side as well. They've evolved. They bring new guys in into that group. So I guess the reason, the biggest problems that we've had in losing test matches is getting our discipline wrong, and we've got our discipline wrong and not being able to adapt to the ref. But I think with Wayne Barnes coming into the to referee that final match, it's going to be great and free-flowing, and that feel of the game will be good for both teams, I believe. And if we don't get that discipline right, that's when we tend to lose test matches and the physicality and breakdown area. If we don't get that right, we know it's coming. Gyps talked about it the last 2 years. If we don't get that right, we don't win test matches. So again, they'll be that forward pack will be building confidence from their last two test matches, but they'll know that they'll need to be at a higher level, knowing that South Africans are massive and we'll probably be going at that breakdown, especially against the All Blacks.
Yeah, and I suppose it'll be interesting to see what the bench for the Springboks will be. You know, they obviously had success with the 7-1 at Twickenham, so that they may revert back to that and you know, put all their eggs in that sort of big forward basket.
Jagni Nava was funny. I know they're always joking, but he was joking about an 8-0 split as well. You know, he's talking about all the different options that you could go with. Can you imagine?
Oh, I mean...
I mean, he was joking, but all the
surely,
same.
Surely,
all the same.
Mind you, Crocker could probably cover half-back first five.
Yeah, totally, totally. It was interesting, though, the post-match press conference. There was some really cool insights from Siya Kolisi into the way that the Springboks team works, talking about Jagni Nava, who's had a long relationship with, as well as Rassie Erasmus, and about how the coaches are so entwined within the players' lives. They know their kids' names. They know their partners. They go out of their way to make sure that they're more than just a coach who turns up and teaches rugby. And it's created a bond within that side that gets them through the tough times.
And belief, I suppose. Like, it, you know, when a coach gets to know you on that level, you know, it fills you with belief. But then it's also belief in what they're trying to, you know, sort of bring and implement in terms of the game strategy and stuff. So you can see they are a very, very close group. They've been together quite a while too now. Like, they know each other inside and out. And, you know, Rassie does seem like that guy everywhere he goes that players love to play for him. You know, he's a big motivational man and seems to bring the rest of that whole coaching group together.
He's got his heart on his sleeve. He loves him. Bryn, also you referred to the change at 30 minutes when they brought on Pollard. Having that kind of bond within a squad, I imagine, allows a decision like that to be treated maturely and understood by players because there is that bond.
He talked around a really important point, I think. You know, they don't talk about the players that won in a World Cup. They talk about South Africa winning the Rugby World Cup when you leave away and it's 4 or 5 years later. They don't think about Lebok being sent off in the first 30 minutes. You talk about South Africa winning their World Cup or being in a position to win a World Cup, you know what I mean? So just shows the collective list, I guess the real care within that team. And you can see it with a lot of good teams. And I think with those results that they've found ways to win, you know, you've got a great environment if you're able to win ugly. And it just showed on the weekend, there's a lot of care and passion and love in that team. You can see it.
I think it's also, Bryn, like, they've had his back, like, publicly. You know, when he's been under a bit of the heat, they've actually come out and said, no, he's our guy.
Yeah.
And I think because they have that, he would have that sort of respect for them because they did have his back, that he probably wouldn't take it that personally. Like any individual, you're going to be disappointed, but I think he'd understand why it happened and that they weren't looking to sort of shine the spotlight on him as an individual. It was just what the team needed for them to, you know, scrape home in a semi-final. And I think you'd rather get pulled at 30 minutes and your team go on to win, then, you know, stay out there and lose and not have another week.
Those minor details get lost by the wayside, don't they, the moment that trophy is lifted? You only have to look at the Black Ferns this week, you know, losing to France. We'd all forgotten the fact that they probably should have lost to France in the semi-final, you know, last year, and then all the magic wouldn't have happened at all, you know? So those little tiny things kind of get lost, don't they, along the way in the name of the bigger goal.
100%. And like we sort of said last week, you know, for all the tough heartache that the All Blacks side has been through the last sort of 24 months, would we accept that to be where we are and going into a final? And if we win it, I mean, I think it would be probably one of the greatest World Cup you know, sort of victories in our history.
Do you see that bond, you know, from the conversations you've had with players, with coaches, with people within New Zealand rugby, the way that that adversity has helped build this team? Like, how deep has that taken the bond?
I think it's, like, just zeroed their focus. Like, you hear guys like Aaron Smith, I think there's a lot of older guys that are leaving are really engaged and really, during the week, you know, not cutting any corners, and that intensity and focus to prove people wrong, I think, has been a big motivator. And that wouldn't be there had you know, Ireland lost that series, which was pretty, could have happened either way. Obviously, Angus Tarvell's card really shifted that game. So, but there was a lot of desire to you know, I suppose, take them to task, and that feeling, that sort of receipts, as they say, is a big driving force for their improved performance, I believe.
The people weren't being proven wrong. The All Blacks weren't playing very well. So they had to prove themselves right as opposed to proving people wrong, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I feel like what they've done is actually just focused on themselves more rather than, you know, like, what can we control, and looked at their own game and been really focused on that rather than always looking at the opposition and probably over-analysing. I feel like they've really simplified things. And, you know, Bryn and I have said a number of times they just seem to have stripped, I suppose, their game plan back. And it's really based on the simple things of win set piece, win direct collisions, don't overcomplicate that area, and then making the right decisions and I suppose, manoeuvring defences to allow them to show their strengths.
What are you seeing there, Bryn?
Yeah. Got to commend Fozzie, I believe. You know, you think around, you know, 12 months ago, the kind of resilience that he's had to show within his coaching group, within himself, and now you, to think about it, to be in a Rugby World Cup final, to be in a position to win a Rugby World Cup where he was, you know, we've got to be able to give him a massive pat on the back. And imagine the PR that's going to be able to be back home, that Fozzie wins the championship, the World Cup, and then he's leaving as an All Black coach, you know. So ideally, as a Kiwi, we want him to be able to win a Rugby World Cup. But I think for Fozzie as well, he'll take a lot of pride, I believe, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for the resilience that he's had to show, and to have an opportunity to win a Rugby World Cup, and then, I guess, for the powers that be, thinking out, you know, was that the right decision? And, you know, that's the great thing that we get to ask, because we can ask that as analysts. But I think Fozzie deserves a lot of credit for the resilience and that coaching group, and especially the players as well, to be able to follow him to get into a position now to win a Rugby World Cup in a final.
He could be Sir Ian Foster.
That would
be an amazing thing,
wouldn't it? How much heat he was under, the resilience, like Bryn said, he's like, I was genuinely happy for him, you know, after that semi-final, and you could see the delight on his face, because, man, it was she was hot in the kitchen. You know, and it all, you know, sort of fingers were pointing at him, and he took it on the chin, and has just gone away and worked quietly, made some adjustments to, I suppose, his coaching staff, which has helped turn this team around. And I think the players have taken their share of responsibility and really fronted up as well.
In the opposite kind of way that you're talking about Erasmus and Marnie Lebok, the players put themselves on the line for him.
Yeah.
They really did.
And I suppose that's the relationship he's built over a number of years. He's been involved in the All Blacks setup for a long time, and I suppose he earned that support, didn't he, through those years. So, and it was the right thing to do if we go on to win this World Cup, wasn't it? So we seem to be in a really good place to sort of finish off in style.
I think one thing for the South Africans, and they can probably take confidence from it, and I know they would have wanted a more clinical performance against the English, but they have A, B, and C options in their game. You know, you talked about it, Ross. They have that ability when they have Lebok, Willemse, and that kind of attacking threat. They can play with ball in hand and test you that way. Secondly, they showed that they can go to a contestable game and be able to smother you in that kind of DNA that they had a few years ago. They have the ability to be able to do that. And then if they can't get that right, in the last 20 minutes, if it is close, they have their bomb squad that they want to be able to scrummage you to death to be able to try and win penalties. You know what I mean? So they have a lot of plan A, plan B, plan C to be able to try and win test matches. And so sometimes it isn't as clinical and doesn't look as pretty, but they have other plans to try and win test matches. So like I said, the All Blacks are going to have to be on in all cylinders, understanding that at this time they might play like this, like that, or at the back end of a game, we've got to be more concentrated on our set piece and being able to try to dominate that area. And so for the South Africans, it's not all doom and gloom. I think that game against England, they'll be happy that they got through, but knowing that there's a lot more work and, you know, there'll be a more fine polished performance, I think, in this final coming up.
One of the most incredible things about this World Cup victory is that if the Springboks win it, it will probably be the greatest World Cup victory ever. They have played five of the top six teams in the world. Of course, they can't play themselves in order to win it.
Mm.
You know, so when you talk about the lopsided draw and those kind of things, to win this World Cup, they deserve it, because it has been the knockout World Cup from hell, going through every single top team.
And they've consistently been at the top end for a number of years. So I suppose that's, you know, defending champions going back to back will be massive in terms of World Cup history, let alone just South African rugby. So and first team to have four titles, you know, that one of these teams is going to do that.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of excitement for both sides in terms of what winning this World Cup would mean for, you know, the legacy of each jersey.
And credit to the Box, Bryn. They've done such a stellar job of mixing their squad up coming out of the quarterfinals. They had the most spread minutes across their squad, you know, whereas Ireland had played all their top 23 and they were tired. The Box have done an incredible job of spreading their minutes, leaving them, despite the fact that they've played all of those top teams, looking fresh.
In a finals week, you're not going to do much training, and, you know, the tanks will be full and ready, and the excitement and enthusiasm of being in a final will give them a lot of energy as well. But yeah, you've got to commend Rassi and co to be able to try and get that squad to be able to come into a final, and hopefully, you know, their tank's full, and you're probably going to see the best version of the South Africans, considering the gauntlet that they had to go through to get there.
Mm. One of the key talking points that we've had along the way is the lopsided draw, right? And we've had a couple of emails which have come through in relation to this. One is from Adrian McDonald out of Ireland, and what he's had to say is, if we take away the Northern versus Southern Hemisphere rivalry and look at it objectively, all four of the best teams in the world would probably be relatively even over playing 10 matches. But in knockout rugby, we see consistently the fact that the Southern Hemisphere are the ones that get through and win the titles at the World Cup outside of 2003 England team. What is it about the mentality of the Southern Hemisphere teams that gets them over the line in these games?
I think.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot of it is like they've been there and done it, you know, like that actually feeling that success and winning a World Cup. There's so many players in those squads that have that feeling. They know what it takes, and I do think that's a big part. I mean, if you look at the All Blacks versus Ireland have been the best team, well, with France, you know, for 24 months, and knockout game, everything on the line. It's like they just didn't. We sort of spoke about it, like, it is a big factor, you know, not having an understanding. I know they Leinster win a lot of trophies and they have played knockout footy, but there's always just that mental aspect to it, I believe, in terms of, you know, having to win these big moments and big occasions.
You can't buy that experience in finals. You know, the likes of Sam Whitelock, who's going to be in his third final. Players like that have understanding and, you know, not just on game day, but driving the weeks and understanding collectively as leaders to be able to get your tank full to be able to then play in a game and all those kind of things that those players have been here and experienced and they've won. So yeah, I'm with Chip around that. You can't buy the people that have been there, done it, whereas the French and the Irish, they haven't had that success and knowing what it takes to be able to get into a final, let alone win one.
Brent, let's dig into your knowledge of this kind of stuff then at Super Rugby, because he's won a few titles.
Oh, he is.
On the way. He's won a few titles. What did those conversations look like within the Crusaders as you were going year on year on year from title to title to title within a Super Rugby final week?
The weeks when you get into a final, your objective is to be able to feel at your best. So you obviously prefer quarterfinal, semifinal, and a final. You're preparing to obviously get into a final, but your weeks more become recovery based, having more meetings. You know, the conversations that you have collectively with your inside units, your forward connections, your hooker, me connecting with Sammy or Scooter around our strategy and that. So I think the conversations just become a little bit deeper. You probably hear from a lot of teams, you know, that bone deep prep. And it probably happens in those kind of stages. The conversations that you have, I think, are the most crucial thing around that. And so the mindset will take care of itself come Saturday. But when you're having those conversations and talking around every little detail, every little thing that could happen in a game, a what-if scenario, for example, when you get into a game, you're very, very decisive. And so, and the other thing is having confidence, like the point that Gyp said, when you won finals and you understand the confidence, you have confidence in knowing that you've done it before, it's another kind of thing of positiveness that you can have knowing that you've done it. So I think those few things there come into a final, make it that much easier, I think, getting the job done, having those kind of things and conversations.
Give us an example of a kind of conversation you had that on final day would have actually led to something practically that helped you win.
Yeah, I think for like what ifs, probably a lot of teams do it. I know a lot of teams do it. You do it throughout the year of like, you play with, a Scott Barrett gets sent off, or there's a red card that you've got to play for like for 30 minutes with 14 men. So then you're talking around solutions in and around, you know, your tens will probably drive in and around, okay, we might go to a four-man or a five-man. So when, you know, we want to have a four-man lineout, but it's pretty hard when you have your lock or your six someone out. So your lineout, take care of yourself. The people that they need to know, your lock, your hookers, your nines, your tens, will drive that, but we've already had those kind of meetings throughout the week and understanding when, if that does happen, we're prepared within that. And then it might be, you know, our scrum might be struggling, for example, for whatever reason, we're not getting the dominance that we want. Okay, it's just going to be a quick hook and a number eight gets out the ball. So then you take the ability of, for the Springboks, for an example, who have a dominant scrum and want to try and get penalties, you nullify that and being able to try and get that ball out quick so they can't get the penalty. So there's a lot of situations in different games, but, you know, one more could be, you know, it's 15-15 and you have a little scenario within the training week of trying to set up for a drop goal, and you're training those situations and those scenarios. So when you do get in those games and you are presented with those scenarios, you've trained it, you've talked about it with coaches, the players who you need to be, and everybody's on the same page and you're not kind of get a head on the nose and you're like, oh, what are we doing now? We've prepared for everything. And so to come back to what Drip was saying, you're decisive and you're really clear and you don't seem frazzled or, you know, you can't get the job done.
Is there a risk of thinking of too many scenarios, of overcomplicating it, of filling your head too much with too many what-ifs?
Yeah, potentially, but you don't want to... I suppose you just don't want to have any questions in your head. So whatever it is for you as an individual, what information you need to seek. So like players like Bryn and I, like quite analytical, you know, we probably, you know, can think into a lot more questions. And there'll be some players that just want to simplify everything and go, I'll just back myself on the night. Mm-hmm. So you just got to find what works for you as the individual so that you are calm when you're out there and you're not sort of sucking energy from your teammates because you're panicking.
I remember interviewing Ian Foster when he'd just given Sam Cane the captaincy and asking him about why Sam Cane is his captain. And his response was really interesting. He said, Sam Cane is a very deep thinker about the game, but in a very simple way. He can break it down into a way that the people around him can understand and get on with it. And I can imagine having someone with that ability to think and communicate is a huge feather in the All Blacks' cap going into a game like this.
Massive. And you know, we sort of spoke about Fozzie and tipping our cap to him. Like, I think Sam Kane, the way he stood up through some pretty tough times on him as an individual, he's never wavered. He's always been, you know, really, I suppose, calm and composed, you know, frustrated at times, but probably held himself in real high regard, I think, for not sort of ever spitting the dummy.
He just, a lot of dignity.
He just kept... matter of fact, and even in these big moments, you can just see the way he delivers the message. I don't think I've ever seen him yell. You know, like, everything's just calm, composed. We've got this. Guys like Whitelock and that as well are going to be crucial in these big moments.
Well, we'll see what happens. It should be a lot of fun. Carrying on this theme about the World Cup setup that we started a little bit earlier, another question for one of our viewers, and please send us an email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz, or comment in the YouTube comment section. Chris Minto sent an email, and this is the best solution I've heard for the problems that the World Cup has had this year. You know, obviously there's a lot of pretty salty Irish fans about the fact that they had to play the All Blacks in the quarters when, you know, there was another side of the draw that didn't have the top four teams in the world. And they're pretty unhappy about that, and they've been hard done by, I suppose, is the way that many people feel. This could be your solution. So listen to this. Petition World Rugby, because Chris Minto's come up with an absolute cracker here. He understands the logistics of needing to make the draw 2 years out in order to book hotels and travel and all of those things that teams need to do in order to be organised. It's quite a big process. So his idea is that when you set up the pools, you do it on those world rankings 2 years out. But when you get to the end of pool play and you have the top two teams from each pool go through to the final eight, rather than doing it in a pool setup where there are two sides of the draw, you then go to the rankings from the day before the World Cup started and you rank them 1 through 8. So in this case, Ireland would have been number one, and in the semi-finals, quarter-finals, they would have played the lowest ranked qualifier, number 8, and 2v7, 3v6, 4v5, and so on. So you get both sides of it. You get rewarded for being consistent for 4 years, but also the logistics that need to be done in the first place. You know, your long-term performance also gets rewarded if you were good 2 years ago.
And it makes the rankings purposeful. You know, like, that actually means they're doing something at a big tournament. So I think that's an outstanding idea.
That's huge. Brent, that could solve everything. A lot fewer salty people around the world.
I reckon we send Chris Minto off to World Rugby and being able to petition this kind of idea. Because, yeah, I think, look, it's great. I think it kind of fixes all the things that we've touched on around both sides of the pool and how much has been talked about worldwide. So, yeah, I'll tell you what, that's a big tick from me. So get him over there.
But he wanted to know, what are the obstacles? Are there any obstacles that we can see in this? Because to me, I can't see a flaw.
The only obstacle from a team point of view is probably planning. You know, like, you can sort of work out who you're going to get or who you may get, and you can sort of be proactive and sort of front-loading from a coaching point, tactical point of view. But I think this idea would mean you're going to have to be the very best at not doing all that pre-work, I suppose.
Yeah, my thoughts, maybe stadium bookings and hotel bookings might be difficult, but if you then say, OK, all of the quarterfinals, semifinals and finals are going to be in one city like Paris, you get rid of that problem. And let's face it, in the majority of World Cups, the largest stadium gets the biggest games towards the end. So why not?
I think it's a great idea.
Yep. We're going back a couple of weeks now because we've had two questions come in the last week about this, people wanting an explanation. Tony Forster and Rod Forster, both via email. The Aaron Smith box kick versus Ireland, when they gave away the ball with 5 minutes to go, or actually I think it was 1 minute to go, and then it ended up going five more minutes because of the 37 phases. Why is that a good tactic?
Well, I suppose it's more Bryn's area than mine, but my understanding is where they were on the field, and you see it time and time, teams, when they try to run a clock out, they give away a penalty. The attacking team gives away a penalty. And that probably to them was like, okay, well, we can't control that, but what we can control is our defensive system and just staying, you know, sort of onside together, connected, a little bit more than the risk of giving a penalty away at halfway and allowing them that entry into the 22 where they dominated at mall time.
Yeah. Bryn, from a halfback's point of view?
I remember when we used to have these kind of scenarios, you're talking what ifs, if you're trying to, I guess, run down the clock and build that phase count. I think a minute 40, 2 minutes was probably the length that you'd feel comfortable to trying to get the job done. Any longer than that, we found that would give away a penalty. Someone would go off their feet if you're trying to, you know, do a pillar setup when you've got going back and forth with the forwards like that. We found that that kind of time period was the higher it got, the more penalties you give away. So, yeah, again, when you've got nines, you've got sevens, even sometimes your wingers, or especially you look at the Springboks, a lot of that forward pack in general can actually get a lot of turnovers, you know. So you're very important in terms of how long you want to try and use that system. I believe it's that kind of minute and a half, 2 minutes is that kind of threshold of trying to close out a game like that.
And I just think sometimes the best form of attack is to defend.
Mm. And at what end of the field? Does it change depending on which end of the field you're at? Like if you were up at their 22 and you had the ball, then suddenly actually you're quite happy to hold the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. So like it was just where we were on that position of the field. It was too easy for them, if they got a penalty, to kick it into the corner and maul. And we know the maul was inefficient that day. If we were down attacking in their 22, I don't think you'd probably even get in that setup to run the clock down. You'd probably keep playing. You'd play your structure and try and score or set up for a drop goal if you're more further down that way.
Yeah, that whole taking a penalty thing this weekend, you know, we've seen different teams go with different tactics. We saw Ireland go to the corner. We saw South Africa go to the corner quite a bit as well. We saw Ireland get pay on a couple of occasions and probably the third occasion when Geordie Barrett did the hold up. How do you see the teams going this weekend? Do you think that in a final they'll revert to being conservative and just get 3 points?
I think they'll take their points when on offer in a final. But if there's some momentum and they're starting to feel some dominance, then that's when you'd make decisions to go to the corner. And how accurate your kick is going as well. But I think early you take the points, I would.
Yeah, and especially if you're down on the scoreboard?
Yeah, I just think scoreboard pressure. And also if you're behind, those small wins, you know, like don't look at it, say it's like 18-0. You don't want to go, oh, it's 18-0. It's like, okay, if we get three here, it's 15. That's, you know, and then so forth. And you just sort of stay in that sort of present moment, which will be crucial.
Now, before we carry on, we've got the Black Ferns and the WXV this weekend. Obviously, it's another big weekend for women's rugby. On the weekend, the Black Ferns went down against France, a repeat of the World Cup semi-final. Pretty much the same scoreline, just the other way around. So I'm keen to chat a little bit of WXV before we carry on and look at our predictions for the weekend. I think we know where that's likely to go. So, Jipper, when you look at the Black Ferns and what happened against France, where did it go wrong and were there positives in there for you?
Oh, massively. You know, I suppose the way they sort of came back. But the one area that they probably, you know, didn't get right is taking the opportunities they had, especially in the 22. I mean, if you use the first try as an example, they're hot on attack and they're 22, you know, lost the ball and they go 80 metres to score. So every time they sort of entered the 22, they probably didn't have that success of coming away with points each time, and that'll be crucial. But what I did like is the resilience and the fight back, especially up front, man. They started doing some damage at scrum time, which was, you know, you could build a comeback off that, and you know they just fell short, one point short. It just wasn't, you know, their night.
Yeah, yeah. Bryn, when you look at that team, you know, do you think there's room there for maybe Kaluna Vale? You referred to the way that set piece came through to maybe start shifting her. She's been a bench player for a couple of years now. Is it time for her to get a start?
Oh, look, I think those conversations can definitely happen. I think the impact that, you know, when they came on was very similar to the bomb squad of the South African men. I thought those girls that were able to come on had some real dominance, especially in the second half. So, yeah, I think Warrington on the way that you play, it's definitely something that the coaches, Alan Bunting and the coaches, will have to think about. But, you know, I think one of the other things that I watched, two things I thought in that game, you know, they had 15 turnovers to 3 of the French. You know, so we were, if you look on the attacking side, we actually had a lot of opportunities in that, especially in that first half. But the last pass or, you know, a little knock on here or there, we weren't able to get the job done there. And then, you know, the French tackled over 200 tackle attempts. You know, so you've got to commend that their resilience around being able to make tackles, get off the ground, continue to keep making them, and then the scramble D as well. They were able to try and slow down the Black Ferns as well. So a lot of positives, I think, for the Black Ferns. But, you know, they'll be bitterly disappointed knowing that, you know, it was at home and the momentum that's been built up through the Rugby World Cup and what they were able to achieve during that campaign. But a lot of stuff that they can get right. So, but in turn, for the French, you talk about scoreboard pressure, had two penalties in that second half to try and to get their points because, you know, they didn't play a lot of rugby. They kicked a lot of their ball away to build that pressure, knowing that the Black Ferns would run a lot of the time, and I thought especially in the second half as well, they pinned them down in that 22 area a lot. And so commend the French, and probably got their win back from that Rugby World Cup that they just lost by 1 point just over a year ago.
The English, they looked like the English from last year's World Cup. Set piece dominance, line out drive. It looked slick.
Yeah, and they've got a chip on the shoulder after losing that final. So you talk about receipts, I think they've probably got a couple that they want to check back in with, because heartbreaking for them. Again, similar to Ireland and France in this World Cup, number one team expected to win.
Yeah.
And win probably comfortably.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So they'll certainly, there'll be a lot of set piece, I would say. There'll be a number of mauls going into those corners.
Australia weren't expected to come close to them. But I think for me, Bryn, it was the manner in which England went about it. You know, it was just
dominant, wasn't it?
Get out of my way, I'm coming through approach.
Well, it's pretty much what they did at that World Cup, didn't it? Before they're losing in that final. Very good at around that set piece area. Yeah, they're outside backs, I think, as well. When they have those opportunities to be able to score tries, they can score tries. So, it was really, it's their, other than that one loss to the Black Ferns, they've been pretty dominant. They have went through that world record run of being able to win multiple test matches. So it just seems like they'll keep those receipts, and knowing that that the Black Ferns, they're not too far away in a test match coming in the next couple of weeks.
That test match is 2 weeks away. Black Ferns play Wales this week, and then they play England the following week in the final week of the WXV. So plenty of good footy to go there. Jibba, we haven't talked any NPC for 2 months because there's been so much rugby on. The Naki getting up against Hawke's Bay. It was a big, big, full crowd in that stadium, admittedly half a stadium, but a full crowd in that stadium, a great event. You must have been pretty fizzing.
Yeah, 2 p.m. as well. It's a great time for that sort of provincial rugby. And, obviously my cousin's in Hawke's Bay, so disappointed for him, but obviously good friends with Jared Hoyata as well, so really happy for the Naki. They put a lot of work into that, just their second title. They used their full squad, blood a few young players that are going to be, exceptionally talented, moving forward. So it was a great day for the Naki and a great day for that crowd that turned up in droves.
Yeah, your boy Stephen Perifetta continued to look good. At that level, he's amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, they got off to a hot start, didn't they? But then they had to hold on. They it was edge of your seat sort of stuff, and you knew Hawke's Bay were never going away. Yeah. They'd go to the end, but yeah, Stevie was a big factor, but again, I suppose that pack and the dominance they got off the bench to keep that platform humming allowed them to sort of win that arm wrestle against Hawke's Bay.
It will be interesting to see how he fares next year amongst the All Blacks duties, considering that Bowden Barrett and Richie Moonga aren't there. There's a really good chance for him to be heavily involved.
And he's going to be more settled in probably the 10 jersey for the Blues. And he looks comfortable at NPC level. If he can deliver that sort of dominance at Super Rugby level, then there's no reason why he can't be in an All Blacks 10 jersey.
Right. Okay, let's get back to the World Cup, eh? Let's finish off with the World Cup. The final, the big final, New Zealand versus South Africa. This has probably pissed some people off. Greatest teams in the history of rugby going up against each other. It's going to be massive. Jip, who wins and where?
I think the All Blacks win, and where it'll be their defence, but also more importantly their discipline. I think we know both sides are going to go hard at each other in the collision areas, and I think that'll be an arm wrestle for the whole 80. But I just think 7 penalties on the weekend. They seem to be getting less and less each week. So I think that discipline will just hopefully starve the Springboks of any opportunities to go into the 22 for them all, or, you know, chipping away with 3 points.
That's interesting because, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I probably would, if you'd said that to me about discipline, I probably would have laughed because their discipline had been quite poor.
Yeah. Well, they were the most penalised team, and then they've come into the knockout stages and been very, very clinical around their discipline defensively, and it's been the difference for them so far, and a clear dominant difference in the semi-final. And it's that discipline will be, you know, I just think both these sides are so evenly matched and across the board, and they have their strengths and weaknesses. So it's just how many opportunities you're going to give the opposition. We'll decide this game.
Yeah, Bryn Hall, of course, a couple of weeks ago, he was all Ireland. this week, you are very much in the All Blacks camp. Where do you see them winning it, if they do?
Yeah, definitely. With the All Blacks, the only team that I was really scared about was the Irish and the way that they played, which we obviously saw on my trip when I was in Hawaii, and I couldn't even look at the camera. So, but no, I just think, the things that Gyps touched on is going to be really important. I think the only thing that will get us in trouble, I'm going to go another way, Ross, the only thing that will get us in trouble is our discipline. You know, like I said, we've lost test matches if we don't get our discipline, especially early on. You know, we give 4 or 5 penalties away and, you know, they have that scoreboard pressure of being able to tick away, whether it's Pollard or Lebok, and they're getting their 3 points, 6 points and being able to build pressure. I think that's when we feel like we're under a bit of pressure. But we've got our discipline right, it seems, in this knockout stage. But, you know, they'll be planning for those what-if moments if they don't get it right. But I think being able to stop that bomb squad, I think, in the last 30 minutes will be massive as well. If the game's close, I think we've had enough, or we've shown enough with our bench coming on that we can nullify that, and being able to stop them to try and win set-piece penalties, being able to build scoreboard pressure or getting into that 22-metre zone and being able to go to the line-out more or building with their forward pack. I feel if we get those things right, it'll be a good result for us, and the points that Gyp touched on as well.
Do you think there's a single New Zealand or South African pundit out there who's going to cross the fence this week?
No, absolutely not. I think everyone's firmly on their bandwagons. But yeah, it's going to be a doozy. I'm seriously, seriously excited for it.
Yeah. Are you counting the hours?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might even watch the third and fourth, even though that's a meaningless game. But it's just more. It's been a great World Cup, man. It's been so good for the game of rugby, I believe.
Okay, well, let's talk about the third and fourth. Who wins that test?
I have to go England, I think. Argentina just weren't there, were they? I think physically they might be a little bit drained, and it's a hard week though, isn't it? Like, it's a tough game to have to play. But yeah, I think England will get it done.
Yeah.
And that'll be a good statement for England. There's a lot riding up from their point of view. To finish third is a real boost for the players and, I suppose, Steve Borthwick, who was under immense pressure after that Fiji loss. And they've just chipped away quietly, and that they were seconds away from, doing the unthinkable in the semi-final.
Now, Steve Borthwick and co, they had a pretty clear DNA of what they wanted, and leading into the Rugby World Cup, we were pretty, we weren't speaking fondly of them, let's be honest. We thought they weren't going to go too well at the World Cup, but they stuck into their DNA, they trust in it. And it's, some people say it's not a great way to play rugby, but with the team that they have and the way that they do play, they execute it beautifully. So I think for me as well, it's probably a really tough week playing third and fourth mentally. I don't know how you would train for that week. You'd have your trainings and whatnot, but the intensity, I believe, is probably a lot different than you would have in a semi-final, knowing that a final's on. So it might be a case of whoever's there mentally and being able to really stay in it and being able to get your heads right, knowing that it's a third and fourth and you probably don't want to be there, to be honest.
The All Blacks in that third, fourth playoff against Wales 4 years ago, they went down the path of changing up their 15. There were those guys like Ryan Crotty, Sonny Williams, Ben Smith, who had been overlooked. And a lot of people in the country were like, why on earth are these guys overlooked? And they had something to prove for themselves as well, didn't they? So that seems like a fairly healthy way of going.
I would suggest that's what England will do as well. There's still plenty to prove. That's why I think a lot of those players will want to suit back up and rip into it, to make that statement. Whereas Argentina, there's opportunity to maybe give a start to like an Augustin Crevy and see if that 1-2 punch can I suppose, spark them, because he's a man that has a lot of passion and seems to be able to bring people with him.
And probably might be the end of his career.
Yeah,
I can't imagine him going to another World Cup.
No. So, if you can find little milestones like that to sort of lean on in these weeks, it'll be crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you all very much for tuning in once again to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. We're looking forward to an incredible test match this week. Get in touch with us at aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz and leave us a comment in the comments section on YouTube, and we'll try our best to answer you next week, which should be an incredible episode with the winner of that title to talk about and how it went down. So, once again, thank you, James Parsons.
Cheers, mate.
Bryn Hall over in Japan. Another big week of training for you, mate, before the big World Cup final.
Yep, definitely is. We've got camp coming up, a 14-day camp. So, yeah, hopefully get some smiles before that. So, no, it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Bryn will be running laps at halftime during the World Cup final.
It gives me fear that he's talking about it being too much running, because the guy loves and lives to run.
Yeah.
I can only begin to imagine the load.
Yeah, sounds sick.
Yeah.
Absolutely sick. Okay, well, thank you very much to all of you for tuning in once again to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. We'll catch you next week. Mā te wā.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.